G'day everybody, I'm Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer. And welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast. Today we are talking about exactly how it is that Sasha Zverev is going to make it to the London World Tour Finals this year in 2017.
I think you meant to say, Jake, how he isn't going to make it to the World Tour Finals this year and is actually going to finish just outside the top eight.
Oh, so you mean he's going to make it in 2018, but you're overlooking the fact that he's going to slide in there in 2017.
Look, I think we both agree, obviously, the kid's got the talent that, you know, a year and a half from now, or I guess almost 2 years from now, when he's a little bit older, a little bit more mature, and has a greater volume of training under his belt, he's going to make it to the World Tour Finals. He's going to be a perennial top 10 player for, you know, quite some time to come. But I don't think he's quite there yet.
Okay, so just to put this in perspective, this was a little interesting to us because obviously Zverev is an up-and-coming guy. He was a number one junior in the ITFs when he was quite young. He's been doing very well on the tour. Everyone has him pegged as being one of the next great players. But right now, let's look at the top like 12 players in the world. Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic, Stan Wawrinka, Milos Raonic, Kei Nishikori, Rafa Nadal, Marin Cilic, Dominic Thiem, Roger Federer coming in at 9, Monfils playing the best tennis of his life at 10, David Goffin, no slack, Grigor on the way up at 12.
My boy Grigor, got to give a shout out there.
Grigor, who obviously is going to be in the top 8. Thomas Berdych has Berdych at 13, we haven't seen that in ages.
Right.
Tsonga, Kyrgios. I mean, Zverev is ranked 18 today.
Right. That's a lot of big names ahead of him. Not just big names, but...
there's not a lot of room. It's not like there's clear that any of those guys... I mean, you could make the argument maybe Berdych is on the way out or Rafa's on the way out, although let's keep in mind, Rafa just made the final.
Yeah, I think anybody's saying Rafa's on the way out making on fast hard courts in the Australian Open on his way back from injury. I don't think anybody's making... I mean, his arm might fall off or something.
Argument.
Who knows? But yeah, I don't think anybody's realistically making that argument. But, what we do have is, I think, a lot of names that are very stable up there and have been stable up there for a long time. And not just that, they're just really stinking good. I mean, you've got a lot of guys that are 26 to 30 in that top kind of seven. Not a lot of space up there.
There's not a lot of space. And so I am going to say this is not actually a caveat, but I want to be very precise so that when this happens, I get showered with credit about it.
Uh-huh.
I am not actually saying that Zverev is necessarily going to finish in the top eight. I'm saying that he is going to play the tour finals in London.
Whoa, okay? That's a big caveat.
So, no, it's not, because what I'm saying is he's going to be the first alternate, and he's going to be healthy enough to play it, and that one of those guys ahead of him is not going to be healthy enough.
So you're predicting he's going to finish the year at number 9?
Well, I would say pretty much.
Okay.
When
we look at the names that are ahead of him on the list, though, he could conceivably finish there. I mean, there's every chance that Kei Nishikori misses the World Tour Finals with injury. Right?
Yeah, well...
I mean, the guy spends half his time injured. And then there's also, I think, every chance that Rafa ends up missing the World Tour Finals injured.
It seems like there's a very good chance that Rafa just decides not to play in order to
save himself or slam. Sure.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Okay, but so either way, you're saying he's going to be top 10, probably number 9, and he's going to squeeze in because somebody's going to get hurt.
Yes.
Okay, and I think that you're almost right. I think he's going to finish the year probably ranked 11, maybe number 10, and that he's not taking the trip to London unless he wants to go sit in Roger's box.
Or, I mean, you know, does it count like if he makes it there playing doubles with his brother?
No, that does not count. I'm sorry. We're absolutely sticking this to the singles for now.
So here's the thing that stands out to me about Sasha. He really hasn't done that well. The fact that he's 18 is a little bit astounding to me. He's done it with consistency.
He's 19 now, by the way.
Oh, I mean... Yeah, he's 19 years old. He's 18 in the rankings.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So he has basically been a third-round Grand Slam guy. He lost in the second round of the U.S. Open.
Right.
But that's not great. That's not great at all. He's not making it to the round of 16, okay?
Right.
So you look at that, and then he's got like four tournaments where he either didn't win a match or only won a round in the ATP thousands. So these are big categories. This is where you pick up a lot of points, right? He's pretty much dominant in ATP 250s. I don't see that changing, right? And he's been able to do, like, you know, well in the 500 events.
Right.
But the idea being, if he just gets a little bit better this year and can win, like, one more match, he's been so steady, it looks like he's winning one more match every week throughout the year.
Let's talk a little bit about his game. I mean, if we're going to talk about where he's going to finish this year, I think we need to break down really quickly what it is he does well, what it is he does, poorly, and how he goes about winning his matches.
Well, I think we should start with he's like 6'6".
And an athletic 6'6". I mean, the guy moves very well.
Yeah, and that's the thing is he really doesn't do anything that poorly for an 18-year-old.
I mean, he has a very well-rounded game. I mean, the guy moves forward well. Like I said, for 6'6", he moves, I think, phenomenally well. He's got we'll start with the serve. I mean, I think he's got a good serve. I think for 6'6", it's not as good as it could be. I think will eventually be.
It's better than Grigor's.
Well, actually, he's not putting up better numbers than Grigor.
No,
be better than Grigor's.
He's not putting up better numbers, but I would much rather return against Grigor than against him.
Right. He should be putting up better numbers than Grigor, but he's not. Right? I mean, already so far this year, I mean, he's 6% down on first serve percentage. And given that he is 6'6", like, that number should be a lot higher. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Realistically. I mean, he's 83 aces, but this is a big worrying point to me on his serve. It's February 15th,
mm-hmm.
and what, three or four tournaments in, he's already served 54 double faults.
See, that just doesn't bother me for a teenager.
Well, I get you. For a teenager, I mean, I can understand that. But I think just the point is, you can't expect to go deep in the big tournaments serving two double faults a set, which is really what he kind of ends up doing at the moment, maybe even a little higher than that.
I don't think that's fair. I think that you can. It just depends on what is causing you to serve those doubles.
Well, I think it's more about when they come. I mean, look, they're happening. Whatever the cause is, unless he fixes it, right?
Well, this is the thing. Is if he's 40 love and he's being aggressive with a second serve and he's hitting double faults at 40 love, like, who cares?
Well, I would care if I end up losing that game.
Yeah, but if he's being aggressive with all his serving and he's up 40 love, he's probably – I mean, he's winning that game like 97% of the time.
Like, sure.
It's not really due to that double. I mean, if it turns out it's due to that double, then sure, I'm totally on board with you. I'm saying, like, he's a young guy. He's being aggressive with a serve. He's a big, big guy who hits a big flat serve. Like, you know, it seems like that's not the best thing right now, but it doesn't seem like it's developmentally harmful.
Again, I think it all depends on when they're coming. And look, I don't think either of us have great stats on that, but it is concerning, right? I mean, that's a number that leaps out to me as kind of astonishingly high, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah, I mean, like you said, he's a big guy. Why is, if for a big guy, 6'6", has that much net clearance, why is he missing so many serves? Why is he missing so many second serves?
Right.
You know, that's just worrying. I mean, it's, you know, it is a bit of a red flag. But so, moving on, I mean, I think he's got a very clean forehand. It's a weapon. It's not a weapon to the degree that we might think about, like, Del Potro, you know, when he's healthy and playing well.
Who has a forehand that's a weapon like Del Potro?
Well, I mean, I think there's guys that, like, still playing. I mean, if we talk about guys retired, I mean, Fernando Gonzalez leaps to mind. I mean, Andy Roddick before he decided to start rolling everything and grind. You know, but I mean, look, I think Federer has a weapon. Like, there's a lot of guys that have big weapons. My point being, look, I mean, it's a very good forehand. It has the potential to do a lot of damage. It's not quite there yet, I think, in terms of, you know, just how good of a weapon it can eventually develop into being. But right. When you pair it together with the big serve, I think he's obviously executing well on the serve plus one, doing a good job there. And look, the numbers bear that out. You know, I mean, he's winning, hang on a minute, whoops, I lost my numbers there for a second. He's winning 86% of his service games, which is a very solid and respectable number, right? Yeah. But 76% on first serves. And I mean, when you look at that, at his age, And also, you know, throwing in, obviously, well, I shouldn't say throwing in the double faults because that doesn't count on first serve point ones, does it? But,
No, it doesn't.
you know, but
Like,
either
be
way, I
careful.
mean, look, he's defending the serve well. He's putting the points together well on his own serve. And I think the serve plus the forehand, which we kind of think about these days as being like the classic 1-2 punch in men's tennis, he has that.
Right.
And when we start to look at the other pieces of his game, which, I mean, I think his backhand is, again, a very nice shot. I don't think it's one of the great backhands in the game. I don't think it's ever going to be. But it's good.
It's good enough to be a weapon.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly good enough that people aren't going to really hurt him too much on it, you know?
No, I think it's very hard to get at. And the thing is, he's pretty balanced as far as – he is a little bit like Del Potro was pre-first wrist surgery where – I mean, if you remember, I mean, it was like when you played Delpo, you didn't have a lot of options. It almost
right.
was like you had to attack him because he could straight up just lean into a ball and hit a cross-court winner on you.
Right. Well, the thing about Delpo is, like, you didn't really want to let him hit backhands, but you really didn't want to let him hit forehands.
Well,
right?
not with time, that's for
yeah,
sure.
And I think, like, that's a little bit of that sense with Zverev, too. Like, with Sasha, it's like, well, I mean, look, if I have to choose, I'm going to have him hit a backhand. But his backhand's pretty darn good. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's not one of the great backhands of the game. I don't think it's ever going to be one of the great backhands of the game. But, I mean, it's certainly good enough for him to do what he needs to do to have a very, very successful career.
Well, and I
you
think
know.
It's getting better.
Yeah, I agree on that. I mean, I think his whole game's going to... I mean, he's 19 years old. His whole game's going to continue
yeah.
to improve. He's going to mature as a player. He's
yeah.
going to get stronger. That's why I say, like, his forehand's not the weapon it's going to become yet. But I think it is going to get there. It's clean enough. Like, I don't, you know, it's a little hitchy to me. Like, there's a few things about it I don't like a whole lot. It reminds me a little bit of Baghdatis, you know, a little flat, kind of just gets through a little bit in a way I don't like. 100%.
You know, it's funny that you say it's a little flat because I actually feel like, as big as he is, the thing that he does different from Delpo is Delpo is just like, he just has that realization like, I'm big, I'm just gonna
right.
hit down
hit
on the
downhill
ball.
On everything. Sure.
Yeah.
No, but
and
I think
Sasha
with...
like puts a little bit more underneath
right.
it and like.
I think he does
on,
in terms of the ball that he hits. I'm talking about the stroke here, right? I mean, I just look when I look at the mechanics of the stroke, there's just a few elements about those mechanics I don't like. Like, I just look at the stroke and I think the stroke's a little flat for him to be able to do all the things I think he should be able to do with it. But I think it is going to continue to mature and develop, and he's going to get stronger and better and turn into more of a weapon. He moves forward well. You know, his net game's competent. I think that also is going to continue to improve.
Last time we talked about what competent means.
Well,
and
okay.
Really,
he's
it's
a pro.
Not
okay.
Competent.
Well, fair enough. If we look at the way we defined competent, or I defined competent in last week's podcast talking about Dimitrov, yes, you're correct. It isn't quite competent yet. I should say, I think he's going to end up being a competent net player. I think he's going
fair.
To end up being very solid at the net. He's not going to reach, you know, Federer level of competency. He's not going to approach like Patrick Rafter. But
no.
Look, I mean, the guy's going to be able to volley. The pieces are starting to come together there. And he's really stinking tall.
He's really tall. And I don't know if he'll even volley. Well, anyway, the point being, like, the way he uses volleys is really just to finish the point when he's already stretched the court.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in appropriately.
So,
like, he's not rushing
yeah.
the net. Like, he's certainly not his older brother Misha, that's for
right.
sure, right? But I mean, he can come in when he comes in at the right time and he does it so in an intelligent manner. He's very effective up there. He's good enough to be very effective. So look, I mean, he's got a great all around game, and it's only going to continue to get better. What I see right now for him as a 19-year-old heading into this season is that there's still some of the consistency missing. You know, when we look at his results, it's still a little bit up and down.
No, come on. How do you...
Look, I think it is. I think he's still a little bit up and down.
How are his results up and down?
Well, so, look, if we look at... Like, you mentioned this. Like, at the Slams, he's not really going deep.
He's third round at the Slams.
Right, he's second or third round at the Slams.
He's second one time and third three times. That's consistent, though.
Yeah, it is. It is, but that's, you know, it's okay, it is consistent, sure, but it's not consistently up. Like, that's not a fantastic result, right?
No.
If you're a top 20 guy, like, we'd expect you to be kind of busting through to around a 16
one more,
or a quarter.
One more round through there. That's the thing.
Right,
he needs
should
to
be.
One
right?
more round through there. But, you know, like, this is the thing. Like, he was building his ranking up. Remember that these results are coming when his ranking was not 18. These results are coming when his ranking is...
Well, Australian Open. I mean, look, Australian Open, he stayed true to form. And granted, he pushed it out of five, and I'll give him some credit for that. But, again, like, I just see a little bit of up and down in him. When I go back and look at some of his results from last year, look, I mean, he has some great tournaments. Absolutely no doubt about that, right? He has some great tournaments. You know, if I look back at some of the bigger wins, I mean, like Petersburg, which he won that tournament. I mean, he went through Yuzhny, Berdych, and Wawrinka for his quarter, semis, and finals, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great tournament. But I consistently see him running into roadblocks around kind of the 11 to 15 ranks. I mean, so he turns around next tournament, Beijing, loses to Ferrer in the quarters. You know, Ferrer's ranked 13. Next tournament at the Shanghai, loses to Tsonga in the round of 16, you know, who, again, ranked 13. Turns around next tournament, loses to Jack Sock. Like, he's getting to a certain point, but there's that, to take that next step, you know, if I go back before that, Washington, makes the semis, that's great, right? Loses to Monfils, ranked 17. So, he's consistently losing to these guys that are in the teens in a way where, like, I'd like to see him break in even with them, but realistically, he's just not. Like, he lost twice in a row, like, back-to-back against TM earlier in the year in France, like at Nice and then again at Roland Garros.
So this is the funny thing about how the tour works sometimes, okay? Where he is in the rankings right now, Sasha needs about 300 points to move from 18 into that 16 slot, which means now at the Slams and at the Masters, he doesn't have to play a top 16 guy until much, much later in the draw. And it's a huge difference.
Sure.
Right?
Well, can be. Because right now, I mean, look, let's be clear about one thing. There's a lot of dangerous people floating around outside of that top 16 at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
You've got Gasquet, Karlovic, Sock, Isner, Simone, Ferrer, Johnson, yeah. Lopez, Tomic. I mean, like, we could go down that list. There's a lot of very dangerous people.
Those guys are studs. I think that Zverev matches up really well with the guys that are below him. Okay, the guys he really struggles with are those guys kind of between 10 and 20. And as he pushes up into the top 16, it's going to cut his matches against them. They're just going to come later in tournaments, which is going to let him get more ranking points, which is going to let him move up. Like, he doesn't have to win. Well, first of all, if he wins, say, a Masters 1000, then, I mean, he's, like, number 12.
Right, but like, is he really there yet? I mean, is he really there to win a Masters event right now?
Well,
do you think his game's matured that much?
This is the thing. If you look at where he's been playing for the last couple of months, yeah, he has some losses, some of these guys in the teens. So does Stan Wawrinka. Like, I think his level's there. He's also got wins over Stan. And what really stands out to me is that he wins a lot of three-set matches, which tells me two things, at least, right? One, he's doing a lot of things wrong to be in so many three-set matches, and that's probably
tactical stuff. He plays a lot of three-set matches,
which is kind of a problem. But for a 19-year-old to consistently have a winning three-set record against, you know, top 40 guys, like, that is really impressive.
That's what I'm saying, but I mean, I think he also loses his fair share. I mean, like, he lost in three to Darcis just like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he does lose his fair share. He plays way too many of them. I mean,
I should say that was four. Sorry, because that was Davis Cup. But yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, shout out to Steve Darcis, who just absolutely took over the Davis Cup tie for Belgium.
Yeah,
I mean,
good job for him, right?
Like, holy crap, he's a really talented guy, and he's followed that up with some good results in Memphis.
Well, so okay, let's just talk about that the three set thing real quick, because I think this is really, really important. When you say that, I think you're wrong. If we look at the last three tournaments Zverev played at the end of last year, right, Beijing finishes with a three-set loss to Ferrer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the Shanghai finishes with a three-set loss to Tsonga. And then Stockholm finishes with a three-set loss to Sock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he's maybe running 50-50 in his three-set matches. This is not – like, he's not consistently going out there and just, like, gutting out three-set wins week in, week
out. Somebody run the numbers on three-set matches for Zverev for the last, like, 65 weeks, please, and send them to us, because I just haven't done that. But, yeah. I mean, if you go back earlier in the year, he has whole tournaments where he plays three sets in every match and wins, three
fair
or four
enough,
out of four.
Fair enough.
So my sense is that he's, it's definitely that it's evening out. I mean, if we just look at where he was this year, I think he only won one match in straights, and that was in the final.
Right.
And he beats, anyway. So the point being, yes, obviously he can lose some three-set matches. Yes, he lost to Rafa in five. But also, just go back to the Australian Open. Winning the first round in five against a tough guy who's really a top 50 player in Robin Haase.
Sure. That's a great win,
It's a good win.
It's a good win.
You just don't expect 19-year-old guys in Grand Slams who don't have... it's not like he has a wealth of experience to lean on.
Well, but, he's played a lot... Look, when you say that, the guy's been professional player for 5 years now. He got his first ATP point when he was... What did we do the math? 15. He's 15 and a half years old. 15 and a half years old, he gets his first ATP point. He's played a lot of matches. He's played a lot of tennis.
He was a number one junior in the world, and we know. He comes. Obviously, he's been around his brother. There's a whole pedigree issue here, and
right.
He's very
I wouldn't expect him to. What would have been more impressive to me is if he'd found a way to win back to back 5-set matches, or if he'd come through that match even if it wasn't actually Nadal. Just beating Nadal in five is impressive. I don't care who you are, what year it is. I think beating Nadal in five sets will be impressive in 20 years' time still. conceivably. Yeah. The dude could be in a wheelchair still be impressed you beat him in five. But I think what's important to me is, if he'd beaten anybody in five again, to me that would have shown something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think, winning that one match, it was a great win, but I don't think, I don't read too much into the fact that it was a five-set victory.
How about this? Look at it from the other perspective. It's very rare for him to lose a match in straight sets.
Okay.
No matter who he's playing.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I think he's just a tough guy to beat who doesn't give you very much. And I think he's got steady results throughout. He's got wins over Federer. He's got wins over Stan Wawrinka. He's got wins over... he's getting wins over the
guys.
Of course
he does. Nobody's questioning whether or not the kid's talented. Right? I think we all think that he is going to have a phenomenal career. By the way, big shout out to tennisabstract.com. Sasha is 68% in his best of 3-set matches.
Thank you very
overall.
Much.
But wait a minute. Wait, that was best of 3. I'm not sure if that actually means 3 sets. I'm going to see if I can find that while we chat here. But look, nobody's questioning whether or not he's going to have good results. Nobody's questioning whether or not he's going to have a fantastic career. We all know he's talented. We all know he's capable of beating guys when he goes out and has a good day. I don't think he's going to go to London because he doesn't have the consistency yet. I think he's still a little bit up and down. I think there's an element where he doesn't have, when we look again at all these guys that are ahead of him in the rankings and the ages of all of them, whereas once upon a time, look, here's the thing that I think just really shows us where people are at when it comes to training and preparation and professionalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, if we had looked at the rankings, if we get in a time machine, we go back and it's 2005 or 2004, and we look at the rankings and we say, hey, there's a young kid, he's hot, he's up and coming, and these are the ages of the people that are ahead of him, 29, 29, 31, 26, 27, 30, 28. You've got a 35-year-old, a 30-year-old, another 31-year-old, another 31-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
We would think that, half these guys are going to be retired by the time the year London
right.
rolls around.
But they're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. Most of these guys that I talk about that are in their 30s still have multiple years of good tennis ahead of them. And Roger Federer may have multiple decades of good tennis ahead of him. Who knows at this point, right? That's really a huge unknown. But point being, these guys just have so much more volume and depth of training behind them. Let's just talk about the physical side of things, right? You obviously know a lot about strength conditioning and strength training. And when we talk about somebody who's 30 years old and has been a professional tennis player for 12 or 13 years and has 13 years of strength and conditioning behind them, there's no way a 19-year-old who still has to work on the skill aspect of the game can possibly match up to the physicality that somebody like a Nadal or, potentially a Wawrinka or a Murray brings to the table.
Okay, so I'm a strength and conditioning coach. I've done that for a long time. And
A certified
to
one,
be
no
fair,
less.
I'm certified. That's the most important part of it.
Right, of
Certified.
course.
I think we're certified tennis coaches too, technically. Anyway, so the important part here when it comes to the strength and conditioning aspect of this is not so much the experience of what you said, even though 99, like, I agree completely with what you said. The really important part that you're missing here is a fellow by the name of Jez Green. Jez Green is Sasha's strength and conditioning guy, and he's the same guy that built Andy Murray.
Right.
Okay. And
But how long did
Jez.
it? Look, Jez is fantastic. Nobody questions that. What I would ask is, how long did it take him to build Andy Murray and get Andy Murray to where Andy Murray is now?
Well, do you know when Jez started with Sasha is the
And I
question.
guess also the other part I should point out is, how many years and how many years of like good quality training did Murray have before Jez even started working with him? I mean, I just think the baseline that Murray's starting at is higher.
How many years has Jez been working with Sasha?
I don't I, with Sasha, I don't know.
Since 2013. So
Okay.
we're going into
Really?
our fourth, yeah.
Okay.
And this is the thing. We're going into our fourth year now. And if you look at what's the most impressive thing about Sasha is not that he's ranked where he is, but it's the fact that he's been able to play as much as he has. He's been playing while he's growing. This guy
Sure.
is an ATP top 100 player while he's growing.
Wait, are you
That's.
trying to tell me that he wasn't 6 foot 6 when he was 15 and a half years old?
Yeah, I am. Now, I'm actually, to be fair, correct me on that if I'm wrong, because I can't. I wasn't there. I'm assuming that he wasn't, right? But
Sure.
I'm very, very sure of that, even though I could be wrong. So, the point being, like, if you look at, I mean, last year he played like 66 matches or something crazy. Like, he's playing a lot and he's not getting injured. Like, Jez has this kid strong. I mean,
Sure.
he's deadlifting like as much as you are, which is like he's deadlifting like several hundred, like a few hundred pounds.
Right.
Okay. And he's still a teenager,
Sure.
right? There are guys who have been on the tour for 10, 12 years and have gone through three or four different strength coaches, and they haven't been able to do a fifth of the work that Jez has been able to accomplish with this kid as a teenager.
Right.
So
Well, because Jez,
he's been.
look, Jez knows what he's about. I mean, I think he's a higher caliber strength and conditioning coach than most professional players have on their side.
He's a higher caliber coach than most professional players are players. So,
Fair
yes,
enough.
but the point being, like, this kid's not breaking down. He's going to get stronger. He's going to get stronger across the board. And, you know, he's just picking up points basically every week. So it's
Sure.
not so much like I can see a lot of holes in his game where I'd like to say, well, he could be better with the forehand. He could be better with the backhand. He could be better with the serve. He could be better with the return. He could be better at the net. That's all true. The other thing I see is the only guys that are going to finish ahead of him are the top six guys right now. And let's say if we assume Roger Federer gets back up there, and let's assume for your sake that Grigor Dimitrov gets back up there, that puts him
Okay.
at eight, and Sasha's going to
For my
pass
sake,
everybody else on the
my
list.
boy Grigor's gonna make it. There's no question about that. But look, I mean, the last piece of the puzzle here to me is he still has a surprisingly large amount of climbing to do. I mean, he's sitting at a smidgen under 1,900 points right now. Okay. I
And he's
mean,
got to
number
get.
10 is at 3,145. So he's got more than a 50% increase in his number of points he's holding to get to number 10. To get to number 9 right now, I mean, that's where Fed's sitting at 3,260. You know, that's a big climb, right? That's a big climb. And so, I guess just to summarize and wrap up here,
He's going over 3,000 points
you
for
think he's
sure.
going over 3,000 points for sure, and you think that the volume work he has and the maturation that we're going to have seen over the last 6 months or so, that he's ready to take that next step.
He's ready to take it, and I think you'll see where this year he played too many three-set matches, and he like dug out these tournaments. I think you're gonna see him consolidating, make better tactical decisions more often. A lot of those three-set matches are gonna go to straight-set matches. He's gonna end up over 3,000 points, and he's gonna probably finish the year ahead of guys like Berdych, which
Okay.
is gonna be a little bit surprising. Berdych and even like Tsonga, it's
Well, I
gonna
mean,
be a little
he has to
surprising to
finish
people.
by both of those because they're 13 and 14 right now. But look,
Well,
I hear all your everything that you're saying, and I think you're right about all of that. I just think that's all going to mostly finish happening next year. I think this year we are going to see better results from him. We are going to see a maturation in his game, him using better tactics. We're going to see him doing all of these things. And those are going to help bridge the experience gap that is between him and everybody else that's above him right now, except for maybe Nick Kyrgios and maybe Puyé. Right. I mean, yeah, outside of that, he's literally, you're talking about him trying to catch up to, you know, 17 players who are older, more experienced. And I think that's a tough battle. That's a tough ask.
Even Puyé and Kyrgios are 2 or 3 years older than he is.
Well, they are. But again, like, he turned pro at 15 and a half. I mean, he's got a lot of tennis under his belt for his age. And I think that's a great thing. But I think a lot of this comes down to the physical maturation, refinement of the tactics, and really, really, truly getting his identity as a player, you know, solidified. And I think there's just too much experience ahead of him right now for him to make the jump all the way up into the top eight, the top nine.
Okay, so there's one last question to finish on then.
Okay.
Who was the last player that got ranked near this high, this early in their career?
This early in the career? I mean, I think we both know the answer to that. It's got to be Rafa Nadal, right? Well, I suppose...
Novak Djokovic.
Novak Djokovic, really? This high at 19?
Novak Djokovic, yeah.
Interesting.
And you saw him shoot into the top 10, into that final eight, and he hung around there for a couple of years. Then we knew everything. You know, we know what happened after that.
Well, we do, but I think also we're talking about a different era as well. You know, this is something we touched on last week. It feels like a year ago. But this is something
Sasha
we touched
Zverev
on.
Is a 6'6" version of Novak Djokovic.
Oh, I don't know that I agree with that. But look again. We're talking about a different era. When Novak came up, you just had Rafa and Fed at the top of the game. That was it.
That's fair.
And Rafa was still, I mean, like when Novak really came up, Rafa was still kind of, you know, mostly getting his best results on clay. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And right now, and you know, by the time that Sasha had to start coming up, and look who's still all ahead of him. You've got four of the best players in the history of the sport all ahead of him right now in the rankings. I just think there's a lot of tough wins to be had out there for him this year that he's not quite ready to gut it in week in, week out, regardless of what Novak did. I think it's a tougher era, and we're going to see the results of that. But, you know, folks, weigh in. You know where to reach us, Glenn@tactical.tennis.
Jacob@tactical.tennis.
You know, follow us on iTunes. Please subscribe. You know, it helps us out. And, you know,
send us some emails. We actually read them.
Send us some emails and we will absolutely be more than happy to talk about some of the questions or answer some of the questions you might have. And, you know, obviously go to the website, tacticaltennis.com.
Later.
Have a good one, folks. Bye-bye.